I asked.
No, he said. Did you see your dad?
I sat beside him, pulled my knees up, dipped my head down so I could see only the blades of grass under my shadow. I don't understand what happened. I don't understand that picture. It doesn't make sense. He said he was driving near the caverns. He said he was there. But that's all he said. That's all. Tyler reached out, took my hand. Did you lie to me?
I don't lie to you, Nick,
he said. But what do you think happened to Corinne? The hairs on the back of my neck stood on end as I imagined her on this porch, inches away, her hair falling out of a blanket, the shadow hovering near the edge of the frame. He cut his eyes to me, held tighter to my hand.
Don't you see? I don't care what happened to her.
Well, it's time to start caring. I took a deep breath. There are pictures, and she's dead. So tell me. Tell me what happened.
You didn't do anything wrong. I promise. Let it go.
I nodded, let him wrap an arm over my shoulder, and I let myself believe him. I have to tell it this way, in pieces. I have to work my way up to it, work my way back to it. I have to show you the beautiful things before I get to the ugly. You have to understand that she was messed up. First, I have to promise you that I loved her. Corinne stood on the side of the road, her thumb sticking out. I didn't slow down.
You're not going to stop?
Tyler said. No, I said. My eyes went to hers. Her thumb was down, and she was staring right back. I pressed the gas harder. Screw you, Corinne. And I blinked. Just once. Once. And she was already stepping into the road, right in front of the truck. Tyler's hands went out in front of him just as I slammed on the brakes. I cut the wheel hard and squeezed my eyes shut as the tires screamed for traction. The seatbelt felt like it was cutting me in half, and I couldn't breathe as we spun, the window cracking, then the thud of metal as we came to rest. I struggled for my bearings as the adrenaline sharpened everything into focus at once. And then there was too much to process. We were facing the wrong way, pressed up against a guardrail, hovering too close to the edge. A branch jutted through the window in front of me, the edge slicing my shoulder where it would leave a scar. Tyler's voice, not making any sense, not coming all the way in. I couldn't move. I couldn't feel. Until I could. Everything, all at once. I felt a wave of nausea and a pain that began in my stomach and worked its way up my back. My hands were desperate and ineffective at the seatbelt button. Tyler had to do it for me. We were too close to the edge, near a drop-off, so Tyler pulled me out his side. There was a ringing in my ears, and the earth kept spinning on me, or I was spinning, looking for Corinne. I put my hand on the hood of the truck and realized it was running, hot to the touch. Everything tingled. Where is she? I whispered. Tyler had his hands on the hood of the truck, too, his arms shaking like he was about to fly apart. Corinne! I screamed. Answer me! What the fuck is wrong with you? In a panic, Tyler checked under the truck, and my stomach ended up in my throat. The road was dark and empty, the woods even darker, our headlights pointing back toward the caverns. Corinne! I yelled again, bent over as I screamed her name. Tyler peered over the edge of the drop-off, jogged down the road a bit before coming back.
I don't see her, he said.
Did I hit her? Did I hit her? No, 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 I said, frantically making my way down the rocks. I tripped, my knees catching the sharp edges, my palms gripping the cold stone. The drop-off was dark and steep, and I couldn't make out any shapes in the shadows.
Stop, Nick. Stop.
Tyler was following me down the rocks. I couldn't see her. Why would she do that? She jumped in front of me.
I know. I saw.
He grabbed my arms to keep me from going any farther.
Your shoulder,
he said, pressing his hand to it. But the pain was in my abdomen, radiating across my back. My hands were shaking. She stepped in front of me. They'll believe me, right? His grip on my arms loosened for a moment as something twisted in his face. "Call 911," I said, because I couldn't find her and she wasn't answering. He took his phone out with his uninjured hand and looked deep into my eyes as I felt another wave of pain roll through me.
"I was driving," he said.
"What? No. I was driving. Look at your hand. You shouldn't be driving."
"You were drinking. You can't."
"I didn't swallow any, I swear."
"You reek of it." "No, it was me."
"How can you even be talking about this right now?" "I was driving!" I was yelling now. "Not you. I won't let you say it. People saw me driving when we left, remember?" He shook his head again, slid his phone back in his pocket. I heard movement in the trees, and I whipped my head in that direction. "Corinne?" I called. No response. No movement. Tyler narrowed his eyes at the trees.
"Just the wind,"
he said. "Where is she, Tyler?" He looked into my eyes, but the world was still spinning.
"You didn't hit her,"
he said.
"This is all one of her fucked-up games."
"Where is she, then?"
"Hiding. Fucking with us. Laughing right this second because she's fucked up."
I closed my eyes, picturing it. I could see it so easily. It was so her. Of course she would do that. Of course she would try to ruin every good thing in my life.
"I can fix the truck,"
he said almost silently. I sucked in a breath from another wave of pain and I nodded. And in that moment, we made a decision. A pact. We nudged a domino and set something off.
"Stay here,"
he said. He handed me the key to the caverns.
"Go wait for me there. I'll get my dad's car. I'll come back for you."
"I can make it from here," I said. "I know the way." But I wasn't going to make it home in time. As another wave of pain rolled through me, I knew I was losing everything tonight. He looked over his shoulder, his body on edge.
"Are you sure?"
he asked. "Yes," I said. I waited until I heard him in the truck, and then I ran. I headed for the caverns because it was the way I knew how to get home, but I pictured her calling, "Come find us," and racing into the depths like she always did, like we used to do together. I unlocked the chain. Would she lock it? If she was fucking with me, yes, I thought. Yes, she'd do this. Then I slipped inside, called her name as I gripped the rope. I yelled her name into the dark again and again. "Joke's over, Corinne." I left the rope, used my phone to illuminate the space in front of me, searching for her in the darkness, so sure I could hear her breathing but seeing nothing. No one. One more wave of pain, and the fear gave way to anger. She was ruining me without even flinching. I gripped the rope as I pulled myself back out. It wasn't until much later that night, when I was all alone, that I realized I had lost Tyler's ring. She had to have jumped out of the way. She had to have hidden. She had to have been killed in some other way. Another car, another accident, throwing herself from the ledge to the rocks below. It cannot be that my dad heard us and knew it had been me. It cannot be that he found her after we left. Not that he took the body and moved it so I wouldn't be found out, so my life wouldn't be ruined. Tyler promised I had done nothing wrong, and so it must be something else. Otherwise, it's too brutal in its simplicity. 10 years later, and the past is still here. A picture shifting into focus. A memory gaining clarity. Something whispering to me in the dark. "Look, Nick. Do you see?" It was time to open my eyes. The day before. Day one. Night. I was tired from the long drive and the visit with Dad, and dirty from an afternoon of house cleaning, but there was still so much to do. Be the responsible one, I thought. But I already was. I just wished Daniel could see that. I'd made promises and trades and decisions that Daniel could only begin to understand. The sink faucet and the drain had turned brown with rust. I rummaged through Daniel's box of supplies, poured the rust remover down the drain, listened to the crackle of the chemical reaction. I slid the thick yellow gloves over my hands and took out the scrub brush, but the ring was twisted, the rock catching on the inside of the rubber any time I bent my fingers. I removed the glove, slid the ring off my finger, and placed it in the middle of the kitchen table in my direct line of sight. Something to tie me to the outside, a reminder that I had moved on from Coulee Ridge. I tackled the sink and the counters, vaguely satisfied with myself, meticulously scrubbing and buffing it all to a shine. The ringing phone was a welcome relief. My eyes had started to go blurry, and I wiped my arm against my forehead to brush the hair back, pulled one of the gloves off my hand. Hello?
Hey, sorry I'm calling back so late,
Everett said. I sank into the kitchen chair, pulling off the other glove with my teeth. No worries. I know you're busy.
So you made it?
I made it, I said.
How's it going so far?
He asked. Pretty much as expected. Dad's the same. Daniel's the same. Dropped off the paperwork for the doctor. I'm tackling the house already. I stood, doing a quick tidying up before heading upstairs.
How long until you can list it?
Not sure. I don't want to list it until everything's fixed. First impressions are everything. I saw that it was almost midnight and yawned.
Get some sleep,
he said. I'm about to. I turned off the downstairs light, backing out of the room. Turned to face the window, to see the trees and mountains illuminated in the moonlight as I stood in the dark. Goodbye, I thought. And thought for a moment that I saw a flicker of light between the trees. I'm going to try to get my dad to sign the papers on his own. Doesn't feel right taking it out from under him, I said.
Well,
Everett said, his own yawn making me smile.
Do what you need to do.
I always do, I said. 10 years ago, I'd stumbled through these woods, trying to get back home, desperate for the safety of the walls. Just make it home, as if that could prevent the inevitable. Dad's car and Daniel's car were gone, and I sprinted across the yard, holding my arm to my stomach, pain shooting through both. The porch light swinging, and the screen door creaking, and me gasping, alone in the house. I was alone. The rest of the night I can handle only in flashes. I'm not sure what that says. That I can stare back at Corinne for minutes on end, but not at this. I have to come at it from the side, grazing pieces here and there, not looking it directly in the eye. I've never told it before. This is the only way I know how. I'm getting there. Stripping off my clothes in the bathroom in a wild panic, trying to stop something I had no control over, furious that I could not, and the fury giving way to something quiet and hollow the moment I surrendered. When I remembered that the world would not bend to my will, that it never had, and it certainly wasn't about to start now. Turning the water on hot, leaving the clothes on the floor, folding up my knees and sitting in the tub, my head resting on my arms, my eyes squeezed shut, letting the water hit me everywhere. 2 days. It had been a hypothetical 2 days ago in Corinne's bathroom, had just barely morphed into something real and hopeful in my mind. And now it was gone, like it had never truly existed. Daniel knocking on the door a while later.
Nick, are you okay?
More knocking.
I can hear you.
Holding my breath so I'd stop crying.
Answer me or I'm coming in.
The door handle turning and a cold gust of air, and Daniel sucking in his breath as his shadow stood beside my clothes in a heap on the floor.
Are you okay?
Letting out the breath along with a sob. No, I'm not okay.
Tell me what to do. Tell me how I can help.
Tyler had told Daniel I was pregnant after hitting him. I knew from the way Daniel had looked at me with so much regret. It's too late.
Get out of the tub, Nick. I can't help you unless you get out of the tub.
I don't want your help. And him.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
His shadow retreating, the door closing. The water eventually running cold, pulling myself up, grabbing a towel from the bar. My clothes off the floor and the laundry running downstairs, wrapping myself in the fleece pajamas I used to wear in the winter, sinking into the center of my bed, hearing Daniel on the phone in his room.
No, Tyler, you don't understand. You have to come.
Me calling back through the bathroom between our rooms. He can't. Daniel hanging up, standing in the doorway to my room, looking as helpless and lost as I felt.
What do I do? What can I do?
Me, crying again. Everything from that night too tangled together, and wanting to go back years, a decade, to a time when every possibility could exist, saying, I want Mom. The most unreasonable request. And Daniel, expression unreadable, with his chin set, his nose swollen, his eyes faintly bruised, saying,
Well, I'm all you've got,
as he came to sit beside me. Tyler made it anyway, on foot, over the river. I heard him downstairs later with Daniel. I'd tell him in the stairwell, on my feet. I'd stop crying. I'd lost his ring. I'd lost everything. And I wasn't sure if his offer still stood, if he still meant it. It was easier to pretend it just never happened at all. Everything in that box in the police station had belonged to me. The pregnancy test, the ring, the stories even. And in a way, it was fitting. That girl faded to nothing from the curve of the road on the last night of the county fair. She disappeared. She changed her hair and her accent, her phone number, her address. She did not look back. Do what you need to do, Nick. Pick yourself up. Start over again. Part 3. Going On. It is quite true what philosophy says, that life must be understood backwards. But then one forgets the other principle, that it must be lived forwards. Soren Kierkegaard. 2 weeks later. Day 15. The sirens were faint in the distance but growing louder, and Tyler was halfway across the room, and his words, body at Johnson Farm, echoed in my mind. I pictured sunflowers, the ghost of Corinne spinning in the field, her body resting there now, 10 years later. But Daniel had said he was taking her to a job site. It couldn't be Corinne. Annalise, I asked. Is she dead?
Yes, he said. She was just lying there in the middle of the field.
Was she shot? I asked, because Daniel had access to Dad's gun, and he'd been chasing her through the woods. Because I'd found that purse buckle near the river where Daniel said he'd lost her, and he had her key, which must have been inside her bag. Tyler nodded.
This family found her. The kids had run off after pictures, and...
He tugged his fingers through his hair, leaving the thought.
This guy I work with. His wife works dispatch, and she got the call. I tried to get there first when I heard. I tried.
Oh, God, I said. Daniel?
I don't know, Nick,
he said, but he wouldn't look at me when he said it. Everett was probably at the airport by now. I couldn't call to ask for advice again. Not about this. Not after everything else. What was Daniel thinking? The body, all the evidence, leading right back to him. And Annalise. Jackson had told me there were rumors, that Laura had left Daniel for a time because of them. The rumors would spin to fact, into motive, in someone else's hands. I knew my brother could fall for the wrong person. He'd done it once before. But I couldn't imagine Daniel allowing Annalise to take his picture if he'd truly been seeing her. Except someone had gone through her computer late at night, deleting images from months earlier. I'd heard his steps through the woods, seen his shadow in her home. Someone who knew his way in the dark, in these woods, by heart. Daniel. Annalise must have taken them when he wasn't looking or when he was sleeping, like all those pictures I'd seen in her files. Pictures of girls caught unaware. They had no idea someone was watching. Annalise, with her big wide eyes behind the camera, fading into the background. You'd never know she caught you. He should have been smarter than this. Daniel had reached her at the river and grabbed her purse, and the buckle broke. He took her purse, her phone. He must have buried it all somewhere or ditched it in his car, because I knew he didn't have it when he met up with us again behind the house. He'd kept her house key, which was now tucked away in my father's slipper. Add my brother to the missing gaps, and the story begins to take shape. He must have found her and... But no. Wait. I knew Annalise had gotten away from him, followed the river, reached the motel, and shimmied through the back window before calling Daniel again, from the hotel phone, because hers was in her purse. I didn't understand. Why had she called Daniel's house? She'd been trying to get away from him. Daniel was probably here anyway. It made no sense. But I'd stood in that motel room, and I'd hit redial, and I'd heard the machine. Laura's voice, cheerful and welcoming, dancing through my head. You've reached the Farrells. Laura, not Daniel's cell. Annalise had called the house, knowing Daniel wasn't there. She had called Laura. My hand rose to my mouth in sudden understanding. It's not Daniel, I whispered. Tyler nodded, staring at the mess around him, but I wasn't sure if he believed me or if he thought this was just me hoping. But I could feel it all coming together, could see all the pieces lining up in reverse. Annalise's whole world was shrinking to a point, and this must have been the only card she had left, her only way out. Tell Laura. Tell her about her dangerous husband, his dangerous family. No need for the blackmail pictures to come into it if she could convince Laura to come forward instead. Where is your husband right now? I can tell you. Chasing me through the woods to keep me silent. He has my purse, my phone. It's not safe for you. Someone in that house killed Corinne Prescott. You must know that. I tried to imagine Laura picking up the phone, listening to Annalise. Would she believe her? Would she listen? Daniel had said Laura wasn't home when he got back, that she'd probably gone to her sister's place, that she was upset. She'd done that before, if rumors were to be believed. But what if she hadn't? What if she'd answered that call and listened? What would she do? What if my brother had been telling the truth, that he followed Annalise to the river and then he lost her? His arm reaching out, fingers grasping the edge of her bag and yanking, the handle breaking, the purse dropping, the buckle lost in the mud. All he had was her purse, her phone, her key, and he'd hidden it all and waited. As the days passed and she didn't reappear, he must have felt that net closing, all the secrets threatening to shake loose, then and now. He used her key to check for evidence at her place, to go through her files, deleting himself from her history as the investigation gained force. Hid the key after in his desk just in case, where he figured Laura wouldn't look, and where I'd found it. The only thing my brother had been trying to cover up was the rumored affair. He knew, as well as I did, what it could lead to. But somehow, Annalise ended up dead in a field of sunflowers, just lying there. Daniel would have buried her, brought the body to one of his abandoned sites. But Laura... I closed my eyes and saw it all sliding into focus. Laura picking Annalise up from the motel. Where are you? I'll come and get you. With Dad's gun in the glove compartment. Laura driving her out toward Johnson Farm, away from town, just driving around, so we can talk. Listening to Annalise accuse her husband and her husband's family. Laura, who had already started a list of slights, the rumors about Annalise, or maybe more, that had made her leave Daniel for a while months earlier. And now, this. This woman, threatening to take down everything Laura had planned. Laura, who was 8 months pregnant and had an entire life stretching out before her, one that included Daniel. She was so close, she could see it, the life she wanted, the life she was owed. Laura, who could not dig a garden, let alone bury a body, but needed a place to get this woman away from her family. Daniel was right. I underestimated Laura. I underestimated how fiercely she loved my brother, my family, her future. I underestimated the lengths everyone here would go to for each other. I underestimated how much I wanted to come back. Tyler looked out the window because the sirens were getting louder. A shudder ran through him.
I tried to get there first, Nick. I did get there first. I was trying to find the ring, but I heard the sirens, and I ran. I ran out of time.
It's okay, I said. The sirens were moving closer, moving with purpose, and Tyler was trembling in the middle of the kitchen.
No, it's not okay.
His hands shook. Did he touch her? He must have.
They found...
He ran both hands down his face. They found the ring? I asked, my vision turning hazy. He shook his head.
A letter.
She sent a letter?
No. No, it was tucked inside her waistband. I didn't see it. I heard the sirens and I ran.
So then how do you know? I asked. He had run, he said, and it looked like he had driven straight here.
Everyone knows,
he said.
Jackson called just before I got here to make sure I'd heard.
He winced, dropped his head in his hands.
To make sure I'd heard about the piece of paper folded over and addressed to the Coulee Ridge Police Department.
He fixed his eyes on me.
No envelope. Like she meant to leave it for them somehow. An anonymous letter.
I pictured the blank pad of paper from the hotel. Imagined her scrawling a note in desperation. Pictured her tucking it away when Laura pulled up to get her, saving it for later. What did it say? I whispered. All the terrible possibilities echoing in my head. All the reasons Daniel had just called in a panic, telling me to get out. Nothing keeps in this place. Tyler paused, lowered his voice.
That they could find the body of Corinne Prescott on the property of Patrick Farrell, advising them to take a hard look at Nick Farrell and Tyler Ellison.
I felt my body start to tremble, mirroring Tyler's. Oh, God. Annalise had not meant to be tied to the letter. An anonymous note and Laura. She was counting on both in a desperate effort to come out unscathed.
Listen, I'm sure someone saw my truck. The family who found her was waiting out on the road. Even if they didn't see me, someone saw the truck. They can place me in the field. I'm covered in pollen. It looks bad. I need to go. I have a cabin in Tennessee. It's not registered under any name, just this place I built on my own a few years back. I need to disappear for a while. I set it up this weekend just in case.
Tyler had been in the field of sunflowers with Annalise's body, with a note implicating us. Maybe he could explain away Annalise. Maybe he could even prove it, but not without revealing what had happened 10 years ago. Corinne comes back to us. To me. His truck, which I had been driving. He's always known, but he let me believe that I wasn't at fault, that something else must have happened to Corinne on the side of the road after we left. He let me believe I was innocent. The box is full of lies, but none of them has the same type of power. There is nothing more dangerous, nothing more powerful, nothing more necessary and essential for survival than the lies we tell ourselves. I stuck my finger in his chest, a desperate plea rising in my throat, coming out in a gasp. You swore I didn't kill her. You promised I didn't do anything wrong. You swore. His eyes closed and he took a slow breath, time stretching, pausing, giving me one more moment. Just one more.
You didn't, Nick. She threw herself in front of the truck. She killed herself. She did it.
There's a moment when you know, Everett said, when you can't explain it away anymore, and you can never go back. Up until the moment I saw those pictures, all the possibilities could still exist. She left. She ran away. Someone else hit her. She jumped. She jumped. I believed she would do that. Hearing her whisper at the top of the Ferris wheel, seeing her step out in front of my car. After Hannah Pardo broke her open, I believed it even more. Corinne Prescott was the most deliberate person I knew. She would have done it. But it had been me, Me behind the wheel, Corinne dead, and Tyler the one who would pay for it.
Get out of here, Nick. Right now. Drive straight back to Philadelphia. There's still time. Don't look back.
No. I suddenly saw what I needed to do. How to ask for Cooley Ridge to let me come back. How to pay my very last debt. It's your turn now, Nick. You were never at Johnson Farm, I said. Whoever saw your truck is wrong. You've been here. Listen to me, Tyler. Listen and do exactly what I say. The sirens grew insistent, but Tyler was wrong. We had time. I could make time work for us. Right now, it could save us. I could see it so clearly, the debts I was meant to pay. 10 years. That's the cost. That's the trade. Corinne has weighed and assessed and assigned it a value. The 10 years I've fought for. That's what was owed. Like it's a blink. Like nothing. Pay your debts like everyone else. My father for hiding her body. Jackson for not taking her back. Tyler, my enabler. The fairness of it all. The give and take like a ledger of rights and wrongs. I could feel her in this house. How could I not see it before? Of course she had been here. Of course. And it was so clear that I would do it. I would pay. But not for Corinne. Get in the shower, I said.
Nick, it's too late.
Leave your clothes in the bathroom and get in the shower.
It's the middle of the day and it's not my house. This makes no sense. I came to say goodbye.
I gripped his arm. I know you did. And I'm telling you to get in the goddamn shower, Tyler. Please trust me. I used a paper towel to wipe up the mud he'd trailed through the kitchen as the sirens got closer. They were coming here. They were coming for us. Run, I said, and he did. I left his work boots in the back of Dad's closet as if they were his, took the key in the slipper and tossed it into the vent as far as it would go. Then I ran to my bathroom. His clothes were on the floor like I'd asked. I picked them up and ran them down to the laundry room with a pile of my own clothes, starting the machine. Tyler's clothes from last week were still in my dresser drawer, and I threw them on the floor of the bedroom, slid out of my own, and left them on the floor too. Okay, I said, stepping into the bathroom. Everything's okay. The first thing they see is everything, the first thing we say. An investigation lives and dies by first impressions. The story takes a life of its own from there. The first thing they need to see is me and Tyler coming out of the shower together. It's the story they wanted in the first place. The motive they wanted to nail Tyler with. Me and him together, and Annalise dead because of it. Now jealousy would be Annalise's motive instead. I heard the knocking, could see the lights coming through my bedroom window from the bathroom, flashing red and blue against the far wall. I grabbed a towel, wrapped myself in it, handed one to Tyler to do the same. I threw on a bathrobe, padded down the stairs, and opened the door to Mark Stewart, Officer Fraze, Jimmy Bricks, and that guy from State. What was his name? Detective Charles? It didn't matter. It really didn't. Water dripped from my hair in the silence that followed. Mark Stewart blushed, looking away from my robe. "What's wrong?" I asked. "Did something happen? Is my dad okay?" Tyler came down the steps behind me, dripping wet, buttoning his pants.
"What is it?"
he asked. He, too, froze.
"What's going on? Nick? Tyler?"
Officer Fraze nodded at each of us. The detective was frowning behind him.
"I thought you hadn't been seeing each other," he said.
I folded my arms across my chest. "Hardly seems like any of your business."
"Lying during an investigation."
His words trailed off as a car pulled up behind them. I craned to see Daniel's car over his shoulder. "Why is Daniel here?" I said. "Is anyone going to tell me what you're all doing here?"
"We have a few questions. We'd like permission to take a look around,"
Detective Charles said. Tyler put a hand on my shoulder.
"What's this about?" "I'm afraid we've got some bad news,"
Bricks said.
"We found Annalise. She's dead."
Tyler's hand curled into the fabric of my robe.
So you came to question me?
He asked.
No, he said. That's not why we're here.
Detective Charles looked over his shoulder again at Daniel jogging toward us, at Tyler's truck parked behind mine.
When did you get here, Mr. Ellison, if you don't mind me asking?
I tried to calculate how long it had been since Everett had left, tried to give Tyler as much of an alibi as possible. About an hour ago, maybe more, I said, peering up at Tyler, his eyes locked with mine, his lips slightly parted, like he was watching the story in my head playing out, becoming real. He nodded.
Yeah, about then, he said.
Daniel pushed his way through the crowd, tried to hide his surprise as his eyes darted between me and Tyler, both of us dripping wet on display.
Everett's on his way back, he said. I caught him just as he was getting to the airport.
My stomach hollowed out, and I felt Tyler tense beside me. Daniel turned to the detective.
Our lawyer told us not to talk, not to let you in.
He held up his hands. Not my call, just following orders.
Sorry.
I left Daniel and Tyler on the porch with the police while I got dressed, cracking open my bedroom window. I heard steps on the porch as Bricks and Officer Fraze circled the house, pausing to peer inside the windows. Eyes, eyes, everywhere. Detective Charles was near the garage, also peering in the windows, occasionally crouching low to examine something on the ground. My heart was pounding, and I couldn't even ask Daniel about Laura as he was busy keeping watch on the front porch. It wasn't long before Everett's cab returned, leaving him halfway up the driveway. He froze as he exited the taxi, then took a second collecting his luggage. Composing himself, I knew. Processing the scene. His fiancée's brother and another man on the porch. Two police cars and an unmarked car along the road. Officers in and out of uniform, circling my property. I stepped outside, and Everett's eyes swung toward mine with the creak of the screen door. He introduced himself to the police, all businesslike, very curt and Philadelphia, which wasn't the best approach, honestly, but it got the point across.
Do you have a warrant for the premises?
He asked the detective before acknowledging me. Business Everett. Efficient Everett.
We're in the process of securing one, he said.
So that would be no, then,
Everett responded.
We'd like to ask them some questions. You're free to sit in. The warrant will be granted, I can assure you.
Great. Then at that time you can come back. They're not answering, and you all need to back up. Off the property, gentlemen.
To me.
Get inside, Nicolette.
Nobody moved, me included.
Okay. Or stay on their property, and I'll file a complaint with the state.
That's not how it's done around here. It makes us look guilty. Appearances are everything. It's not my property, I said. Not yet. I don't know what my dad would want.
Nicolette?
Everett snapped.
Get in the house.
Bricks raised his eyebrows but backed away. The group walked slowly toward their cars, but they didn't leave. The unmarked car remained on the street. Officer Fraze spoke to the detective through the window.
Inside, Everett said, motioning for us all to follow him.
And you are?
He asked, as the door shut behind him.
Tyler Ellison.
The silence that followed was long and excruciating, until Daniel started pacing, pulling Everett's focus. They're not leaving, I said.
They're waiting for a warrant to come through, and in the meantime, they're making sure you don't ditch anything.
Jesus Christ,
Everett said, dropping his bags near the door.
Care to fill me in on what started this shitstorm? I just left, for fuck's sake.
The prescriptions were unopened on the table, and I saw him taking that in. And my wet hair. Tyler's bare feet. They found Annalise's body, I said. She was shot. I saw Daniel tense. And she had a letter, accusing us in Corinne's disappearance.
Accusing who?
He asked.
Your dad or all of you?
It's complicated, Everett.
Try me,
he said. I couldn't look at his face. I could tell he wanted to understand. I could tell he was still hoping. But you have to pay your debts. I turned to Daniel, who was standing against the wall. You should go home. You should check on Laura, I said. I wondered if he knew, if he suspected. He must know the key was missing from his desk. Maybe he just assumed Laura found it and took it, silently punishing him. She'd been out that night, after all. I wondered if he'd ask, or if he'd go home and check his gun, if he'd say anything at all. I walked over and hugged him. Thank you for coming, I said, and then, with my mouth pressed close to his ear, you went home after the bar. Laura was there. You were together. He moved his hands to my back, pressing his head closer to my shoulder to show he was listening. Make sure Dad's gun is never found. I felt Daniel's whole body change in that moment of understanding. He didn't look at me, kept his head down, ran his hand through his hair as he walked slowly out the front door. I watched him go, watched Officer Fraze put his hand out as Daniel approached his car, watched as Daniel slowly spread his arms out from his sides. What are they doing to him? I pressed my palms to the window as Officer Fraze patted his hands up and down Daniel's body before stepping back and nodding.
Looks like maybe the warrant is for a weapon, Everett said. They're making sure he didn't leave with it.
He paused.
Are there any weapons here, Nicolette?
What? I turned to face him. No, there aren't any weapons here, Everett. He looked out the window again, squinting against the sun.
Time to tell me what the fuck is happening here.
I stepped away and turned to Tyler, who was sitting on the couch in silence. You should go home too, I said. He shook his head, glanced from me to Everett, and said,
I'll be out front.
The screen door banged shut behind him, and I saw him sitting on the bottom step, chin in his hands. Everett followed as I walked into the kitchen. He was too close when I turned around. Okay, here's what's happening. Annalise Carter is dead, I said, and she's trying to bring us down with her. She left some note that said the police should look into me about what happened to Corinne. The note said Corinne's body might be here.
And why would Annalise want to do that? Why would she make something like that up?
Because she's fucked up. The world is full of fucked up people, Everett. Do you know how many I see a day? And those are just the ones I can see.
But Annalise is dead, Nicolette. Somebody killed her with that note on her. Do you see how that looks?
Oh, I see. Do you think I'm stupid?
They're getting a warrant. A warrant. What do they think they'll find?
I don't know, I said. Everett got closer and I backed up.
What was your father saying? Why did you need the cops to stay away from him? Why do you need him silent?
Back up, I said, my hand on his chest. I opened the fridge, grabbed a soda, buying myself time, clarity. He paused, hands hanging at his sides.
Okay, let me put it to you this way, he said. You're called up on the stand. A lawyer asks, what happened to Corinne?
Prescott, I said.
What happened to Corinne Prescott? What would you say, under oath, on the stand?
I tipped the can of soda to my mouth, but he didn't back away. The carbonation fizzed against my lips. Well, I said, I guess I'd plead the Fifth.
This isn't some cop show, Nicolette, and the Fifth Amendment is only admissible to protect yourself.
I looked out the back window, lowered my voice. Everett, you're bound by oath, right? This is confidential. I put the drink on the table, eyes on his, and hated the way he was staring at me, his head tilted to the side. What was he looking for? What would he see? He staggered back, or maybe I'd pushed him. My hand was charged, numb, and I couldn't tell.
What did you do, Nicolette?
He whispered. Everett lived in a world that didn't touch mine, in a place where he saw the injustices elsewhere, somewhere lesser than his place in life. His moral compass did not falter. His world was black and white. He could not look into the darkness, or take it home with him, or love it. He'd never welcome the monster into his heart. Would he hide a body for his daughter? Move one for his sister? Everett's world was all on paper because he'd never been tested. What was it he'd told me? the terribly dark thing that nobody else knew about him? He'd seen someone die. And what had I done, he wanted to know. So many things. I'd killed Corinne. It was the only explanation remaining, no matter whose fault it had been. Abandoned her on the side of the road. Lied to the police, then and now. Lived with her underneath my house. Run away from Tyler and home because of it. Left them all to pick up the pieces. But I didn't owe Everett that truth. Pay your debts, she insisted. Pay them all. I thought of my apartment, with the painted furniture and the desk with my nameplate, waking up and feeling for Everett beside me in his darkened room. I slept with Tyler, I said. Everything about Everett hardened, and I realized this was a blindside, not something he'd anticipated. I waited for seconds, moments, as it sank in.
Tell me again, he said.
I backed up. Felt the cold, impersonal wall. I slept with Tyler, I said again, my heart pounding, my skin tingling. Tyler was outside, and it was just us now. I waited to see what Everett might do, if he was going to rush out front and hit Tyler, grab my shoulders and shake me, call me words that would burn in my memory. But he closed his eyes and lowered his head as he backed away. Everett wasn't like that. He wouldn't kill, or move a body, or lie to take the heat or blame. He was a better person than the rest of us.
I'm going to be sick, he said.
Let us both believe it was because I'd been unfaithful. He called a cab, had to ask for my phone because he didn't have a signal, and even speaking those words seemed to kill him. He didn't look at me during the wait, didn't speak to me as I sat across the table from him, drumming my fingers. When he heard the car pull up, he grabbed his luggage, headed for the entrance, didn't look at Tyler as he walked through the door, not a violent bone in his body. I'm sorry, I said, as I stood at the top of the porch beside the screen door. No, I was wrong. As he was leaving, he took my upper arm in his hand and whispered in my ear, something about how he had really loved me, and something more like, how could you, or, I hope you're happy, some empty platitude, but I couldn't hear him clearly because I was focused on his fingers, digging and digging into my skin, grinding into the tendons, pinching a nerve, my knees giving slightly as my mouth opened in silent pain. He left, and the bruise was already forming. I sat beside Tyler on the steps, watching him go.
You okay?
He asked. Come on, I said. Come inside. They'd be back. That's what Everett had said. They'd be back with a search warrant, and they were watching us now. As soon as the door shut behind us, I leaned into Tyler, felt his arm slowly come up around me. There's a key in the vent. I need to get rid of it, I said. Tyler and I decided we'd flush the key, using a plunger to make sure it wouldn't float back up. But first, I studied the intricate pattern of the A on the keychain, and I told him I'd found it at Daniel's, told him everything I believed about Daniel and Laura. I whispered all of it under the sound of running water as he scrubbed the mud from his boots. I noticed now that there was a thin line bisecting the keychain, and I instinctively pulled the two halves in opposite directions. A lid slid off, revealing a flash drive. My ring for the flash drive. In the end, it turned out I'd paid that debt, too. I wondered when Annalise had felt that unbreakable thread growing between her and Corinne. If it was after she saw the pictures. If it was before. If it started all the way back that night at the fair. I imagined Corinne looking away after Daniel pushed her back, and Annalise standing there watching, their eyes locking for a moment too long. I imagined Annalise seeing Corinne cry, all alone maybe, something I'd never witnessed. Or maybe Corinne looked deep into Annalise and saw something dark and appealing inside. Something that bound them together. Or maybe it was brief and one-sided, like most moments we assign weight to. Maybe Corinne didn't even notice her standing there, But Annalise saw something she needed, a likeness or a comfort, that even Corinne might fall. Even the strong are lonely. Even the adored are sad. I hoped that she loved her in that moment, when no one else did. Or maybe it wasn't until later, when she saw the photos shifting back into focus. I know what it's like to leave, to come back, to not fit, to feel that distance between you and everything you've ever known. But Annalise couldn't find a place out there, couldn't let go enough. A lonely kid, a lonelier woman. She came back to what she knew. You want to believe you're not the saddest person in the world. Annalise found her there, in the pictures. The sad, lonely girl. She found her in the old, dark photograph, covered in a blanket. But still, she wanted more. To find her in Jackson and Daniel, Bailey and Tyler. To pull her from my father's guilt. One more thread when I showed up. To take her from me. I pictured Annalise staring deeply at the image of Corinne's limp body with fear, with longing. Am I you? She asks. Is this what we become? How we fade away and disappear? The woods have eyes, and monsters, and stories. We are them as much as they are us. Another car pulled in before sunset, but not much earlier. The fireflies were flashing in the yard. Detective Charles walked up the porch steps, warrant in hand, detailing what they were searching for. Everett was right. They were looking for a gun and a body. I stepped aside, grateful that I had burned my father's ledgers and all the receipts, the history of his debt to me, his money for Annalise's silence. I'm late, he'd said to me at Grand Pines, late on hush money. My daughter's not safe. Mark Stewart sat at the dining room table with me and Tyler like a babysitter, but he wouldn't look directly at either one of us. I moved out to the front porch an hour later when a new team showed up with machines. They tore up the new garage floor as if the fresh concrete was evidence enough, dug through the garden, brought out a dog to sniff around the rest of the property from the road to the dried-up stream bed, but eventually they left too. And in the late evening, when I was sitting in the kitchen with Tyler as the officers finished dismantling the house, Hannah Pardoe walked into the room. Her hair was longer, the curls dyed darker, and she'd traded her red lipstick for a muted maroon. Her body was softer, but her face harder, and she still didn't smile. "Nick Farrell," she said, "so it all comes back to this." As if no time had passed at all. We were merely picking up a conversation left mid-sentence just a moment ago. "There's nothing here," I said. She sat down in the chair across from me and said, "Annalise Carter, I remember her. She was an alibi for your brother. You remember that? For all of you, really." "I remember." She pulled out a piece of paper sealed inside a Ziploc bag, evidence removed from the scene. "She was killed with this note on her, Nick. Explain that. I dare you." It was written on a small rectangle of paper in neat handwriting, probably from the pad at the motel, but the ink had bled out from the rain, softening the paper, tearing it in places. "I came home. Tyler dumped her. She blamed us both. She wasn't a nice person, Detective." Hannah tilted her head to the side as Detective Charles came to stand behind her.
"You lied to me about your relationship with Tyler," he said. "Either you're lying then or you're lying now. Either way, hard to believe you."
"You lied first, Detective. Standing in my front yard, putting on this schoolboy act, telling me you didn't want to get Tyler in any trouble. Please." Hannah frowned at him, then turned her attention back to me.
"Explain it to me, then. Who besides the two of you that she implicated in that note would have a reason to kill her?"
"Oh, you don't know Annalise very well, do you?" I asked. Annalise had a lot of enemies. I turned to Hannah again. "Ask the people she went to school with. She liked to expose them, tell their secrets, like she was daring them to do something in retaliation." I'm sure she got tangled up in some mess she had no business being a part of. Thought she was so much better than everyone else. Break her open, just like you did to Corinne. You'll see.
Is that so? Hannah Pardo said.
Yes,
Tyler said. Do you hear what I'm saying? She incited too much anger, too much feeling. She's not at fault, but she's hardly innocent. Brought it on herself, you know.
Okay. Let's get down to the details then, shall we? You know how this goes.
Hannah placed the recorder between us on the table.
Where were you, the both of you, the night she disappeared?
Right here, cleaning the house, I said.
Anyone who can vouch for you?
Tyler. I called him. He was at the bar, and he came. Broke up with Annalise standing right across the room from me, to do the right thing. He stayed here the whole night.
So you're each other's alibi. Is that it?
Tyler leaned back in his chair.
Jackson Porter was with me when Nick called. He saw me leave. Knew I was coming here.
Hannah leaned across the table.
Your father has a gun registered in his name.
He does?
Yes. Any idea where it might be?
I haven't seen it anywhere. I shrugged. We moved him out last year. The back door lock's been broken for a while. I need to get it fixed. Someone was actually messing around in here the other day. I stared at Detective Charles. It could have been anyone.
Hannah's jaw shifted. The concrete was fresh in the garage. What were you doing in there, Nick?
Tyler. I'm assuming she had help.
We're refinishing it,
Tyler said. To bring my dad home, I added. I smiled at her. He always liked you, Hannah. She frowned.
I thought you were getting married to some lawyer in Philadelphia.
Do you see a ring? I asked. She shifted in her seat.
You're filing guardianship to sell the house. We've seen the paperwork.
My mind drifted, but only for a second. I shook my head, smiled to myself. No, not to sell. There's no sign. It's not on the market. We have a court date for guardianship. I'm bringing him home with me. As if this had been my plan from the start. The distance, like time, just a thing we create. All the pieces falling in a beautiful crescendo, lining up to bring me safely home.
3 months later. Somewhere there's a storage unit full of painted furniture, and when the money runs out and they can't reach me because I've left no forwarding address, they will auction it off or cart it out to the dumpster in the parking lot behind the building. That person will disappear, a ghost in their memories. I changed my number. It's just easier this way. The ring hasn't turned up. Maybe Annalise's brother found it before the police swept through. Maybe her mother hid it to save her from something she didn't understand. Maybe it's buried in her purse, along with everything else, wherever Daniel left it. Maybe it will turn up one day in the form of a new car, or a redone garage, or a year of college. Nothing stays lost forever here. They took Annalise's life apart, put it back together again, broke open her family and the people she went to school with, tracked down leads from college, dug into her past. As for me, I was done talking. I didn't have to speak again. I knew that much from Everett. Tyler stopped talking, too, and then Jackson, and Daniel, and Laura, until we slowly became a town without a voice. Could they really blame us after last time? There were whispers about us, but the whispers I could deal with. If the entirety of Annalise's investigation existed in a box, I imagine this would be all you'd see. A folded-up letter, addressed to the Cooley Ridge Police Department. An autopsy report with the findings. Gunshot wound to the chest, bled out, clean and simple. All other evidence washed away. Her phone records, which Daniel explained away, I told her to stop calling, she was harassing me, as he rocked his baby in his arms. And lies. He was home with me, Laura swore. Came home from Kelly's just after midnight. We were here together. I was up sick with heartburn from the pregnancy. He made me pasta to settle my stomach. We were together the rest of the night. The house was coming along. We completed the garage first for Dad. Sometimes I thought maybe there was nothing wrong with him. He was doing better back home, surrounded by things he knew. But occasionally he'd wander off.